Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 3rd, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm playing Strays and Automobiles fan, super fan, Scott Long.
Only fan. I think you got that wrong. Only fan. I corrected that for you.
That is not true. You are the only one in the history of existence who did not like that movie. I promise you that.
Oh, man. I think all of our fans now, all six of them, are going to come out of the woodwork now and prove you wrong. I think they're going to come.
I don't think so. I think this is going to be a bad day in the history of Chris Cosenza. When those emails, all two of them flood in, you're going to be really embarrassed that you did not laugh at John Candy and Steve Martin in one of their pivotal roles.
Pivotal. Wow.
Cinematic history, man.
Yeah, you're really pulling out all the stops now, just like a train would make on a stupid show, movie.
But... Ah, look at that.
Well, let's stick with...
You're smarter now. You know that now.
I watched it a little bit. I got most of it in, and I was like, I just can't finish this. So I took a picture of something and then sent it to you on Facebook and made fun of you. It was great.
So that was you didn't even get through it all then. So you didn't get the good parts.
I got through like an hour and 40 minutes of television of it, too. So that was the other thing. It wasn't like...
You can't watch it on TV.
Yeah.
So this is the funny. This is the kismet part of it because it wasn't on Thanksgiving, which shocked me, so I didn't get to watch it. And then you blasted it, and then like yesterday, I was flipping channels in the morning, and at 10 o'clock, it just happened to be starting on AMC, and I watched it, and like the pivotal scene in it, the rental car fight with the Ferris Bueller secretary, is so hilarious. But it's all because it's full of F-bombs.
Right.
And they can't do it on AMC. Right. And when they cut it all out, it was horrible.
Yeah. That's how I watched it, too, is AMC. Yeah.
So you probably missed some of the, you know.
The best
vulgarity and profanity has its place.
Yeah. Not on our show, though. We hint at it once in a while, but we don't actually do it on the show. Pardon my pun.
All right, why don't you get us kicked off since we're not even going to get to poker until about 30 minutes into the show.
Well, that's not true because I'm going to make this about poker at the end. So last night, of course, I'm watching Survivor and...
Spoiler alert if you haven't watched it yet. I had to get up early this morning, so he couldn't spoil it for me.
Like 2 minutes into the show, I'm like, I already know this is going to be on our show tomorrow because Scott's going to want to bitch about something in here. I know it, but I wanted to bring it up because I feel like I can bring it all the way back to poker at the end of this. So here's what happened at the show last night. There's a contestant, his name is Deshaun, and he had to face what's called the Monty Hall problem. And
which, by the way, I'm going to interrupt real quickly just to say that Xander is my choice to win now because that kid is like 23 and got the, and he was the one that said Monty Hall.
Yeah, yep. I've been picking for this kid for a while ago.
Been hosting it for the last 10 years. He went all the way back to classics.
I totally want Xander to win this. But so the Monty Hall problem, for those of you who don't know, it's the actual problem that came up back in the day was, you know, they had the three doors like Monty Hall, and you're told that there's a car behind one of them, and then there's two goats behind the other. So... in this case, it was an image of fire was in one of these containers, and then images of a skull were in the other two. And so if Deshaun, this is the whole point of Scott gets mad, because this is a whole chance thing that came in, that if he got knocked out of his challenge at the end, he'd have this chance to do this and survive without even having with immunity, or he'd get knocked out and he wouldn't even be voted out. He'd be the only player in the history of the game to be removed from the game without actually being voted out, other than, you know, being sick or whatever. But So here we are. He takes the three containers in front of him. He makes his choice. Then Jeff Probst.
My choice, by the way, too.
You chose that one? How would you even know which one to choose?
I mean, it's part of the game. I'm like, if he's going to turn Survivor into a game show, I'm going to play the game show, right? So
I think, but... So,
it's just like at the ballpark when you're trying to figure out which ball cap has the...
Right. But it looks like we were watching Jeff mingle with some elevator music on in the background. But Jeff Probst then does his best Kevin Spacey impression and reveals the contents of one of the other containers, which of course is a skull, and turns to Deshaun and is like, okay, you can choose again now between the last two if you want. So that's when I thought, obviously, Deshaun never saw the movie 21 because... he would have heard of variable change. He would have heard that lecture that Ben gives that he should have chosen the other one since he got another choice because it increases the odds that one is 66% chance now the car, or in this case, the flames, you know, the fire. But he stayed with his first choice, bucking math and bucking the TV show or the movie or whatever, and he was right. He survived. And it was like, I'm in bed, and as soon as it happens, I turn on Gina and go, this is a Monty Hall problem. And then that's when Xander says it. And she's like, what the hell is a Monty Hall problem? I said, I can't explain it now because I want to see what happens. It's very exciting. I'll explain it when it's over, you know. And then that's when Xander goes, it's the Monty Hall problem. It's the Monty Hall problem. And it was really wild to see this happen in real time or whatever. And to know that this guy didn't know that show, never saw that movie, didn't know this problem. He just stuck with what he wanted to, which is what you think most people would do anyway, because they're thinking, oh, now it's 50-50, you know, I'm still sticking with mine. But you were supposed to, really supposed to, according to the laws of math and everything, you're supposed to change your pick. And he didn't. And he won. And he survived. And so I was going to let you rant about the whole chance thing, but I wanted to do the 6 degrees of poker here, or 6 degrees of Scott Long with this, and to get it back to poker. And I think I can do it. So we'll forget the whole, you know, one of our longtime listeners and fans, you know, Dave Bloomberg, you know, loves the show, and that's how we connect to poker. No, and I'm not going to make it so that Scott likes to rant about this show, and he's a publisher of a magazine. And no, I'm going to do it a cool way.
All right.
So Deshaun plays the Monty Hall problem. The Monty Hall problem is featured in the movie 21. Starring in the movie 21 is Kevin Spacey, based on... the character is based on Mr. M, or J.P. Masser, who played in Scott's World Series of Poker event, SHU, in 2007. And he coached Robert Varconi, the 2003 World Series champion, who kicked off the whole, you know, amateurs can win the main event thing. So I did it. I took it from Deshaun to J.P. Masser to you, playing SHU at the World Series of this guy. And you didn't even know it. You didn't even know the guy was sitting to your left.
Yeah, I could not have done that 6 degrees myself, and I was part of that. So that's impressive. It's absolutely impressive.
But, you know, we always talk about chance on the show, and you talk about how this show's, you know, it got so... last night was just absolutely the shark jumping, I think.
Wow, okay, well, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because it's a poker show. And I do need to message Dave Bloomberg to tell him that I'm fascinated. I am in mass anticipation of this week's Why Blank Lost podcast, so they can talk about this. Because, well, first of all, I want to mention, you could have said that I was on Let's Make a Deal. That would have been a nice touch.
That's true.
You did not say that, so it was a harder route, so I give you even more credit. So,
oh, my God.
And that I'm related to Kevin Bacon by 6 degrees. So you definitely did around the mountain there instead of through it. So, I actually don't have a problem with this twist this time.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a long week for Survivor fans because we had all been teased that there was going to be a big twist. And there are a lot of spoiler alerts out there that it was going to be the worst thing ever to happen on Survivor. And I'm like, oh, my God, as bad as this season's been, I can't even imagine what it's going to be. And then when I watched it and they explained it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not a fan of it, but I don't think it's a big deal because everybody had an opportunity to participate if they wanted to. And so there was a choice to participate or not, and you had to base it on – Jeff kept talking about your place in the game, but I think it was also on how well you thought you could handle that little bounce thing. Mm-hmm. And then even after that, you still had opportunity. The person that ended up getting voted out had an opportunity to protect he or her, himself or herself. I'm not trying to spoil anything here. with some of the other 97 twists that thrown in the game. So I actually didn't have too much of a problem with it.
All right. Well, that's good. I mean, like I said, if everyone has the opportunity, that's one thing. But, you know, when someone just randomly, because it's funny, I woke up this morning to like three stories in my newsfeed of people just absolutely saying, this is it. I'm done with Survivor, or this is ridiculous. And Survivor was good because people survived on their own merits. There weren't immunity idols like they introduced in 2013, you know, hidden ones. Everyone was just ripping mad about this was like the final straw for a lot of people. It was just ridiculous.
And here's a tie into poker as well, too. We'll talk about a little bit of this a little bit more later in the show, too. You know, if you were a poker purist, you want to watch unadulterated poker on television, right?
Yeah.
You don't want the cut up 44-minute plus commercials, ESPN thing, right?
Right.
Or the WPT. That all worked to make poker as big as it is because it brought in people who aren't poker purists, right?
Right.
So there is a place for it. Not saying that, but if you're a poker purist, you just want to watch that 8-hour-long tournament without any cuts. And just watch it, right? And I think that's what the problem is this year is you've got Survivor purists like me, David Bloomberg's co-host, who's fantastic, by the way, much smarter than David Bloomberg is, who are just like, we're not getting to see enough of the actual gameplay. And it comes a week after one of the best episodes ever, when it was all gameplay and people talking and none of this carnival games and stuff.
Right.
So I think that's it. So, you know, again, it's that proverbial who you're trying to appeal to in season 41, the people who have been with you forever and who are probably dwindling. Or are you trying to reinvent some excitement to get more people in to keep the show going? So.
Oh, this will get to. And this will get to one of the items we're coming up after the next item. And it's sort of similar where mainstream poker and stuff like that. And do you want it anymore? Or do you want, so this is very similar to that argument. So we'll
yeah,
continue
absolutely.
With that in a minute. But, I just thought it was interesting that the Money Hall problem came up, and I always think of 21. I think of, you know, I just think of that movie as proving that there are games that they think are luck, but they're actually skill. And that's why poker and all that. And then of course that guy who started the whole, you know, MIT, / Harvard team or whatever blackjack team was at your table at the World Series. You didn't even know it. So
didn't
that was a good opportunity to make fun of him last time.
Kevin Spacey was at my table. I would have known. and so here's the thing. I haven't seen 21. I have no idea what you're talking about. So now I'm going to have to go research it, which is exciting. I'm going to learn something later today.
Oh man, that was a pretty good movie. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, you should watch it.
All
right. As he often does, Danny Negreanu, who finished third in this year's World Series of Poker Player of the Year race, has detailed his financials from this year's series. Kid Poker cashed in 18 of the 55 events he entered, winning $1,451,797.68. Probably wins cents, but anyhow. After deducting the $1,052,773 in buy-ins, that left him with a profit of $399,024.68, or a 37.9% return on investment, just slightly better than what you could do with crypto and Robinhood. Those totals, of course, don't include what he owed backers, which he also detailed in his post, or any non-buying costs of playing tournaments such as food.
So this is very interesting because one of the things that when it first jumps at you as raw numbers, you think, holy cow, he committed a million point, you know,
1.5 almost.
1.05, right, to entering events. But that's not really necessarily true. If he had success early on and won a $400,000 payout, he may have said, okay, now I'll enter five more events. So there's no real way to know how many, you know, a lot of people have a budget and they say, okay, we're going to enter this, but if I win this, we'll enter more. You know, some people do that. Some people don't have those stipulations on there. So there's no real way of doing it, but it's a fantastic return on his investment. You know, 38% for a month's work, you know, that's massive. I mean, just think about it. If there's 30 days in a month, you know, I mean, it's crazy how much his daily income would have been. So Pretty phenomenal. But, you know, at the same time, it's scary to think that he paid $1 million in buy-ins, you know?
Yeah, right.
Crazy.
Yeah, so a couple things here. I mean, he made as much as the president of the United States makes in a year in 2 months. So that's pretty cool. To me, I mean, again, without doing the math, you know, until you see the 37.9% return on my, wow, that is a hard way of making an easy living, which is what we've always said about being a pro now, right?
Yes.
He had all the success and he only staking home 400,000. And that, I believe that's before backers. I'm like, that just doesn't seem worth it.
I know.
Now, yeah, obviously he's a pro, so he played 55 events or 89 events. More if you counted the online ones, I think. So that's a pretty healthy schedule there. And I'm sure there was some weekend warrior like us that flew out there and played one $500 buy-in event and won, and who has a nauseating return on investment, right?
Right, right.
Because they only played the one event and did really well in it. So, but when this is your business, I mean, you have to play. You may not have to play 55 events. I think Josh Aria just posted his stuff, too. I think he played 37 events, if I remember correctly, somewhere in the 30s. So, and the grinder played a good 20 events more than he did, and still come up short of the player of the year race. So, and the other thing is just how exhausting that is.
Yes.
I don't think if people are listening, have not played any World Series events, I don't think you realize how exhausting it is. Obviously, hopefully you make farther than I did, but even, you know, making it past the dinner break like you did, it can be exhausting. Especially if it's these 2 day events, though, and don't even get started on the main event, which is super grueling. To even fathom playing 55 events, and some of those he re-entered as well, too. So,
yep. And to play at the level that he plays at, to earn that much money and to cash that many times, too. Yep. I mean, it's mentally exhausting. It's physically exhausting. It's boring, too. I mean, who wants to keep going? It's just like working in a factory. You're going to the same place every day, doing the same thing straight every single day for a month or 2 months. It's just crazy to think. I mean, I say this often, you know, there's things I love to do, but I wouldn't want to do them around the clock, you know? I mean, it's just too much. It's too much for me. I don't know. Like you said, that's what he does for a living. So, but still, I would want more breaks than people get when they commit to the World Series like this.
And also remember, this is the busy season for poker players, so it's kind of like Bad Santa, right? You know, Billy Bob Thornton has 1 month a year where he makes his money. For the rest of the year, he spends the rest of the time, you know, drinking beer. So, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I don't think any pro keeps up this kind of schedule year round. I think I could be wrong, but I would imagine DeGrom is going to take some time off, and then he'll play some of those manufactured TV high roller events and things like that, and then maybe a couple other series, but nothing at this thing. So if you train yourself to, hey, for these 2 months, I'm going to eat, drink, sleep, COVID, poker, you're in a different frame of mind. But I think it also shows the why every year you've got a couple players that just seem like they can't miss, like Aria this year. Because I think that one of the things I think it would certainly motivate me to get past that boredom is once you start accomplishing stuff, you want to continue. You feel like you can continue accomplishing it, right?
Yeah.
And certainly that was helping me with this year, right? You know, he desperately won that 17th bracelet after he got the 16th. And got so upset about coming so close and finishing. But I think that just fed him to be better every time and focus on, you know, every decision has to be a good one because, you know, I need to be at that final table again. So,
yeah, just crazy. Just crazy. But I love it that somebody shares their info like this. I know he's always been sort of an open book anyway. But it's staggering the amount of money he paid to be in these, the amount that he won, the amount that he profited. Just staggering. Good for him, though.
Yeah. All right, Earl Burton writing on Poker News Daily wonders whether, after watching this year's World Series of Poker, whether poker even wants to be considered quote-unquote mainstream anymore. To support his case, he used Poker Go's streaming rights for the series. Poker Go, obviously wanting to profit over those desirable streams, only offered the first hour of each stream free before they became limited to subscribers. Burton said, while production was fantastic this year, shifting the TV broadcast partner from ESPN to CBS, which only aired recorded events, didn't inspire people to tune in when they likely already knew the winner. Bird suggests Poker Go considered airing some, suggests that Poker Go considers airing some events in their entirety for non-subscribers and for CBS to broadcast its content on the main network so viewers don't have to hunt for it deep in their cable or streaming lineups.
So the headline of this, and you wrote the same headline they had on the actual column, when they wrote it on the column, they capitalized the word wants in all caps, whereas yours is all caps here. So I couldn't tell if it was rhetorical or not. If you read it the way their headline is, does poker even want to be mainstream anymore? So I think it's rhetorical because obviously they want to be mainstream because they want more viewers and more money. And so he gave them a way to do that by saying, you know, let everyone see it, not just poker people who are rabid enough to spend for a stream. You know, let everyone see it so they can get hooked on it and get some money back into the system and or in the community or whatever. And I think that's what he's saying, right? And here's the way to do it. When I read it, my eyes started to glaze over when he went through the whole history of poker in there, which you didn't totally. If it's on, I realize you want to try to get common people or everyday people to watch it on TV, but I can assure you, everyday people who don't play poker are not calling up Poker News Daily to read stuff. So you don't need to give us the 45 paragraph chunk. You know, of how the history of poker and how long it's been in the United States. That means nothing to anyone. I skipped over that by the time that's why I'm asking you all these questions because I skipped over glanced over. Too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think his point is, he makes a couple good points. And like, but again, this is the way broadcast and money have been going now, right? So, you know, if you want NFL Sunday Ticket, you got to get DirecTV, right?
Right.
Nobody wants DirecTV now. And I'm saying that as somebody who had DirecTV for 20 years before I finally got pissed off about it. But if you want to get it, that's what you have to do. And same with Poker Go. So, if you want to watch this stuff, you know, you're going to have to subscribe to it. I mean, it's hard to criticize them. That's their business model. I mean, I don't know exactly what the financial terms were. I assume they're paying for the rights to it. And if that's the case, then they need to make that money back somehow. I mean, it's not a charity, right? So there's competing interest here, right? You've got a company's business interest, and they believe they have a good product and they have a base of people that want to pay for it. And then you have the Earl Burtons of the world that really want poker to blow up again, right? And it's never going to blow up again if no one can see it on TV or no one can see it on TV the way they want to see it. So, I mean, I see both sides of it. The CBS thing is obviously you're losing a little cachet when you go from ESPN, which is a sports network. And, you know, we had that old debate in the past about whether poker is a sport or not, but ESPN made it a sport, whether you agree with it or not. But now it moves to CBS. Now, that doesn't mean it's not still sport because there's lots of sports on all these other networks. But you do lose a little cachet, I believe, from going from ESPN to CBS and certainly a lot less broadcast. And ESPN even had some of it live, I believe, if I'm correct, right? So now it's gone to, as he said, taped. And every time I saw anything from the series on TV, it was because I was doing the updates for the show, right? We were like updating it. Event number 44, and there's poker. I'm going to watch it. Oh, it's event 6. I know who won this. was like poker 3 weeks ago.
And the other thing, too, is he was talking about how CBS put it on its sports network, and that's not even with most cable packages. You have to pay for at least two steps up from the basic to get CBS Sports Network, and some of the cable companies don't even carry it regardless of how much you pay for your cable. So you're already limiting your audience, whereas ESPN is basically on every single cable network in the world. And you screwed yourself that way. So if you're not going to, on top of it, show it for free somewhere, you know, you're hardly going to get people to watch this stuff anymore. And, you know, of course, it's the money. The minute online poker became regulated, they would get tons of money back into the money would just flow. And then they'd pay for all this advertising. Someone would come up with a show and they'd put it on TV because they don't care because they're getting the advertising. So, you know, it's a lot of contributing factors. But he's right. You need to be able to watch. If you're going to call yourself the world championship, you know, and try to give that as, you know, hey, we're the biggest game in town, you need to let everybody watch it.
So the other thing, too, is he's suggesting that there's a poker conglomerate out there. Like, poker is an actual company, right?
Right.
Poker is different for everybody out there. So, I mean, you know, what's good for one person is not good for the other. And, you know, if we go back to when it exploded, I mean, and this is tying back in the Survivor thing, right?
Right.
What were the shows that really got people interested? It was Poker Celebrity Showdown, right? It was some of these other really weird ones that whatever that Poker Pro thing was, where they did all kinds of different, it seemed like games and stuff rather than just poker. The gimmicks, right?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, is that what poker, the unnamed conglomerate here, wants? You know, do they want to get more people into the game by turning it into gimmicky, or do they just want to be happy and reinforce the love of the game for the purist, as we mentioned again? So if that's where we are now, I'm on board with it because I'm a purist and I don't think I need another boom here to make me enjoy the game more. I would rather watch, again, good poker on TV than I would Dennis Rodman folding a set of aces after he just bluffed with 6-high. So it was fun at the time, but I don't need to revisit that. And I don't know if that's really going to help poker anyhow. So,
man, how do you remember that? I remember that not you said it, but how do you remember shit like that? Unbelievable.
There's a couple of things like that I remember. I mean, I can't remember much about that show, but I do remember Dennis Rodman being on there and just being a complete idiot.
Yeah, me too.
not surprised. But.
Okay, any updates? Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move. You know, a little while ago, somebody contacted us and said, Chris, there's something wrong with the show this week. O'Malley's move is missing. And I was like, what? And I had one of those heart palpitation moments, you know. So I get on my computer and I hunt and play the, and no, it's there. So I wrote him back and I said, no, it's there. He goes, no, it's not there. I don't know what happens. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm sorry. So what happened was he was a new listener and he had picked us up when there was a complete O'Malley's move. One week, and then the second week there was only one episode, and he's like, what, you know, so he's freaking out thinking we're completed every week. So I think we probably over these last 15 years could have done a better job of explaining every week that, you know, we play part one, give you a week to think about it, and then next week we'll replay part one and then give us our give you our thoughts and then play part two and wrap it up. But we just assume everyone listens to us all the time and you get a little complacent, you know. So this is a brand new O'Malley's move, which means we're going to play one part for you. We're going to give you a week to think about it, and then next week, barring any, you know, problems, we'll get back on and replay it for you again and then tell you the conclusion, what we think. So here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are back at our $1, $2 No Limit Omaha home game. To be clear, this game is pot limit pre-flop with an assumed completed small blind, and then changes to no limit after the flop. The game is six-handed, and we sit with 200, close to our starting stack. It is early in the night. The blinds post, the under the gun, and MP fold, and we are in the cutoff with the jack of spades, 10 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, 6 of spades. This is a speculative hand, but it does have quite a bit of potential. We would like to try to buy the button. We make it $6 to go. The button does not like our plan and calls. This player is a solid Omaha player, but rarely raises preflop, choosing instead to outplay his opponents and build pots after the flop. He started the hand with 325. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and we go to a flop. With roughly $20 in the pot, it comes down the ace of spades, 8 of diamonds, 7 of hearts. The big blind checks, and with our decent wrap, we're going to make a bet. Since all of our outs are nut outs, and we have emergency backdoor outs to a flush and even a long shot straight flush, we make it $15 to go. The button thinks briefly before tripling our bet, making it $45 to go. Are we up against a set of eights or sevens here? The big blind folds, and we decide to call. With around 110 in the pot, the turn is the four of diamonds. We've just increased our outs, but have decreased some of our nut outs. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations. A podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Trading, the world's number one poker trading site. And longtime listener Michael Paul is back. And he says he's played 2-3 no limit in one of his local card rooms. Normal preflop raises vary between $15 and $30. Just depends on the player, really, he says. You're in the game for $500, we start the hand with $390. We've been pretty tight and haven't played much in the 2 hours we've been there. Max buy is $400, so we topped up once, and we are currently stuck $110. The villain is somebody you've never played with. He's been at the table about an hour, so he's not seen you play much for that time. You've seen him play a few hands. He's C-bet every time he's open preflop, and you saw him call down a $60-ish all-in river bet into a 120-ish pot with third pair to win that hand. Wow. He knows lots of people in the room, so he's a reg, but we just haven't played with him.
Okay.
He's immediately to our left in the two seat, and we're the nine seat. Seat one is open. He starts the hand with 385, so we have him covered by a nickel. Under the gun and under the gun plus one both fold, and it's on us with the queen of diamonds, ten of diamonds.
It's not a good hand, although it's formerly Scott Long's favorite hand.
That's true, yes.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I probably would play it just because I'm feeling good and, you know, I love playing poker and I'm at the table having fun and this is a lot of potential. But it's one of those hands where Scott likes to say, you got to hit the flop hard and you got to be disciplined to know to get away from it if you just happen to hit a 10 or something. Don't get too invested in this hand. But if I'm going to play, I always try to play for a raise. If there are other limpers, I might limp. But since I'm first in, we got to give the illusion that we have a hand that's better than Queen 10 suited. So I'd probably raise. I think they said around 15 was usual. So I'd probably make it 15 to go.
15 to 30, said, so just depending on the player.
Okay, so maybe 20, but probably 15.
Yeah, this all comes down to how confident you are with the, your ability at the table, what your perception of the table is. I have no problem raising with this hand. I also have no problem folding with this hand. I have a big problem limping with this hand.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you're on top of your game, that you are better than most of the players at the table or all the players, absolutely have to raise here. If you're in a little bit over your head here or you're just not having a good day, I think you take a pass on this and wait for something better.
Yep, that's good advice.
Okay, our hero says he throws out a little $10 bet because you want some money in the pot just in case and at least chase out the pure garbage hands. So, I don't know, kind of more like a limp to me, but I know what he's saying. But
what's the just in case for? Is it because he hit a high hand or something? Because he might think about Royal Flush? Just in case. What does that mean?
Just in case, yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, right?
Yeah, or a bad beat.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was funny. I had a dinner two nights ago with Elliot Schechter on Call the Floor. Call the Floor, whatever, you know. Yeah. Mr. Call the Floor, how's that?
Savant.
Yes, he's down here playing some events, and you know, he's having a great time running the Rippers Casino up in New York now. Poker room up there, and one of the funny stories he talked about is how somebody, there's only $29 a pot and needed to be 30 for the high hands. Players argue with me. He's like, nope, that's the rule. So you should have bet.
Oh,
you
wow.
The that big thing, you should have bet. So yeah, so that might be the case here.
Yep.
All right. The villain raises to 30, button calls, small blind calls, and it's back on us.
Well, now that there's a lot of people in the pot, you're getting pretty good odds to call because that's 60, 90 plus your 10s, 100. There's 100 in the pot to, you know, 20 to win 100, 5 to 1, whatever that is. So, I mean, you still want to see the flop now, you know, but you got to be disciplined, you know. You still want to see the flop because you got some money in there. There's a lot more money in there. I like to play suited connectors with a lot of money so I can draw. This isn't a suited connector. It's a one gapper, but in the same vein. So I'm going to call, but I'm going to be vigilant. I'm not going to just, oh, look, I've hit a queen, you know, and there's an ace on board, or, oh, I've hit a 10, but it's, you know, no, I'm going to be pretty strict with my hands here, so, with my betting and stuff. So let's call.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. This turned into a kind of a set mining situation for me, even though we're not set mining.
Right.
I'm looking for, we got a lot of players in this hand, a decent pot built here. But I want a big hand so I can stack someone here. I don't want to hand-to-hand combat over tens and queens and stuff. All right, so our hero does call the extra 20 with the specific plan to check raise the villain if he see bets on the flop, and if we hit something. Interesting.
Okay.
And so 120 in the pot, and the flop is the queen of spades, eight of diamonds, four of clubs, small blind checks to us.
Well, this is interesting because we, you know, we hit top pair, but the guy who raised could have ace queen. He could have kings. He could have aces. He could even have queen queen. You know, why would he have raised if we raised? He re-raised us. So, you know, maybe this guy has a better hand than queens. Now, it's not saying he doesn't. He could have jacks. He could have done that with tens. He could have done with just ace king. But I feel comfortable checking and letting him bet. And then I think we even talked, Michael was talking about check raising maybe. So I don't know if I would do that, but it's a good way to find out early if your hand's good. So maybe you check in with the idea of maybe check raising. I like to bet when I hit my hands just because I don't want anybody getting a free look and hitting a random king seven, you know. So I like to bet here, but I can see checking too. I probably would check just because that guy took control of the hand and let him see what he does. If he checks again, it's either a set or he missed. You know what I mean? Or an overpair, but if he checked, I think he's going to bet his overpair. I mean, if it got to him and he bet, he would bet his overpair. If he checked, I would think he's missed it completely and he's scared or he's got a set. So then you'd have to sort of do a coin flip with that. But I'm going to check.
Yeah, this is a tough spot because we just talked about how we want to hit this hard and this was not hard enough for me. So based on that, I can't justify betting here. That being said, I want to kind of see how the hand plays out. I mean, I'm not ready to throw out my pair of queens with a medium kicker. So I think I have to check here. I'm not so sure I'm on board with the c-bet strategy here. But again, this is a player in the game, watching the game, feeling out the other players. And, it's generally not a bad strategy to, check raise there and find out where you are. I just kind of hoped that we'd hit a little harder. I feel a bit better if there are two diamonds out there than the one diamond. But yeah, I'm going to check. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do yet.
But
I kind of want to see what happens. Because we have three more people to act after us. I mean, the small blind still gets to act if there's a bet.
Right.
All right. here says we hit top pair, backdoor flush, straight draw. And we told ourselves we would check raise if he see bets. So we check. Villain bets 75, and the button and small blind both folds. Back to us, and we're heads up.
See, this is when it sucks, because if you're going to raise, it's basically you only had 390 in front of you. If you raise, you usually do the 3X thing, which is, you know, 225, which is more than half of what you have. And you know what I mean? Now you're screwed. Because yeah. This is why I don't play cards like this.
Yep.
Because you're
committed if you check raise here.
Yeah, if you had ace queen and you hit your queen, you'd be comfortable check raising or you'd be comfortable just betting out. But when it's queen 10, you lose to all kinds of kickers, you lose to overpairs, you know, which even ace queen loses to overpairs, but you're more confident with top. And if you call, I mean, I don't think it looks like you're drawing. So maybe you call and then check again, and then I don't know. This is tough, you know. I mean, I like pot control where you're just sort of keeping it down. But what's going to happen on the turn if a blank comes? He's going to put the hammer down. Now you have to make a decision for your whole stack anyway. So why waste 75? You know, either do your move now or fold. And no one's folding top pair, so it's either call or raise. And if you call and then the guy shoves on the turn, you're going to be like, eh. So, you know, it's either fold or shove, I think. It's weird. I know it's going to sound funny, but I can't imagine calling, right?
Only two options here, because if you call, that's now 270 in the pot. So the only legitimate bet on the next round is what you have left, right?
Right, it's what you have left.
So now, obviously, you can still fold at that point, I guess. But, the money's going to get in one way or the other, so you might as well get it in now. And then, if he's sitting on aces or kings here, he's probably not going to fold, but a shove here will make it very difficult on him, right?
Yeah.
So this is where you need to put that pressure on. This is another weird thing. We talked about this is like Hand Ludwig last week, too, where understanding your stack size and what's going to happen with different plays. And I think this is one, if you take a deep breath and you think about it, you realize that, you know, any raise here has to be a shove because otherwise, what else are you going to do? So if you're comfortable and you think that, you know, either you have the best hand or you can push him off this hand, then I think you have to shove.
Right. Say I can't imagine just calling. So if I'm going to shove, it's 220. First, it would be 225 on to raise. That's what normally I would bet, 230. We took 30 off the initial 390 we had, so that's 360. So you take your 230 off that, you have 130 left. You know that you're not folding 130 for any bet on the after that. So why not shove and make it more, you know, intimidating to the other person? Because you want them to let the hand go if you're behind, obviously.
Yeah.
Or you want them to fold a hand that might get there or something. So I'm going to shove, which sucks because I didn't want to play queen 10 in the first place and I want to be really vigilant about it. And look what I did. I ended up calling the 30, hitting it, and now I'm looking at myself, put all my money in with queen 10. It's terrible.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
This is why you don't play these cards.
All right. Right here it says there's a 195 in the pot. We push out 255 total for raise of 180, leaving us 121 behind. Okay, so this is what we mentioned, right? So that 121 is going in next time. Why not just put it in right now?
Yes.
All right. He says, with this raise and this amount behind, I'm pretty much telling him I'm committed. But you should have committed. Yeah. And it's going in on the next street. With your raise, there's 450 in the pot. He has to call 155 to win 450 or 2.9 to 1. That's money. He tanks, like really tanks. All right, now this is where I really think we should have shoved. But anyhow, we just stare at the board. He checks his hand twice while he tanks. He has to deal with a pull on the 75 so he can see what's left. And he even says he wants to see how much he's saving himself if he calls. He says it's possible I could have pocket eights. I'm thinking in my head I could also have pocket fours too, so why isn't that an option? Pocket queens aren't likely since I raised so little and only called out of position. Finally, he seemingly reluctantly calls. Pot has 630 in it, and again, we have 121 remaining. Turn is the nine of hearts. So our board is queen of spades, eight of diamonds, four of clubs, nine of hearts, and we are first act.
Well, that helps us too, so I'm shoving. I mean, Jack now wins us the hand, and top pair still might be good. This guy might have jacks and not believe us. He could have kings, and he's wondering if we have a set. So, but I don't see myself checking, and then you know he's going to shove if we check because he's going to think we're nervous and we didn't want the call. So I might as well just put it in there and get him one last time to think about it. Maybe he missed his draw. Somehow he made all this with, I don't know, 9-10 or something. I don't hit a 9 or, I don't know, jack 10, and now he's made it straight. I doubt he kept all that money in there for a gutter, so... Might as well put it in the middle, and if we need it, we have a jack on the end to win.
And this is really the problem here, right? Because I can't imagine any hand at all, any legitimate hand here folding for 121 now. When 630's in the pot, so that'd be 750. You have to put 121 in. And we hadn't covered by a nip, though, so a little less, right? But
yeah.
So I can't see anybody not folding here. So, and we had him tanking, and he said, like, really tanking, right? So had we shoved it all in there, he probably would have let it go. So now the fact that he's going to call, now obviously if we have him beat here or we catch him on the river, we're going to be happy he calls. But I don't think we want this call now, and I think we priced ourselves into giving him a call, right?
Yeah, this is so weird.
So, you know, if we end up losing this hand, I think it's because we didn't put that extra 121 in on that flop bet.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right. So our hero says 10 jack gets there, 8-9 suited gets there, flush draw and hearts is now an option. I really didn't think there was any card that would come in on the turn except an ace or king that was going to keep me from shoving regardless. And I was already committed anyway since it now 6 times my stack in the pot. Of course, there's also 6 times his stack, too. We shove. He actually tanks again. He's really thinking about it. And finally he calls. River is an offsuit king. So our final board is queen of spades, eight of diamonds, four of clubs, nine of hearts, and offsuit king. We turn over a hand, and he tables the king of hearts, eight of hearts.
Oh, you got to be kidding. And see, that's why when you make that extra bet, I can't believe you call with an eight and a king. That's just sick. I mean, this is a horrible player. I mean, first of all, what's he doing in the hand with the king eight? We talked about this before. Didn't I say that too? I said a random king seven or something.
Yeah.
Right? Earlier. Turns out he just had a pair. That's why he played it. But first of all, betting 75. And he was the one who raised to 30 after we raised to 10 with king eight of hearts. Which, wasn't that a former Scott Long hand too? Any suited king?
And he sued the king. Yep. Yep. Lost a lot of money on full tilt with that.
Yep. I don't know how I remember that. But then he bets 75 with middle pair. And we raise him, and he still calls. Then we shove, and he's got, at that point, second pair. And then he hits a three-outer, and three-five-outer. That's just insane. Just insane. Maybe he thought the nine of hearts gave him a flush draw and he wasn't paying attention.
I begin to wonder, because our hero says a flush draw and hearts is now an option, so I wonder if he missed one of the suits, because that would make a difference if it was the queen of hearts or four of hearts.
Didn't he say not an option?
No, he says, and a flush draw and hearts is now an option.
Oh, now an option. So maybe that's it. Maybe the guy did that because he had a heart.
So that's a little different. So, yeah, if you've got middle pair, or second pair, or actually third pair, not third pair,
right,
which you called out before, right? And a flush draw. Now it's a little harder to get away from at that point. But on the flop, it's very easy to get away from with that shove, right?
Right.
He really can't. I mean, he's talking out loud about set of eights and stuff like that when he's sitting there with one of the eights. I mean, come on, whatever. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's where we lost. Now, obviously, we can criticize this guy's play, but we put him to a test on the flop. We just didn't put him to the right test.
No.
Or the most difficult test.
Yeah, if he had the hearts on the turn and we shoved, I still don't know if he folds. He still might fold, but I don't know if he folds. But the call in the end was just, you know, I mean, if it had it hearts, is the only reason he calls, because he can't call its second bottom pair. He just can't.
Yeah.
So, or third overall pair, whatever.
And our hero went on to say he picked up flush outs on turn when we effectively committed on the flop. So, yeah, so there must have been another heart out there.
Okay.
Yeah, so our hero says he looked at the odds to see where he was in the hand pre-flop, assuming heads up. He was 55% favorite. Clearly, he was just raising to establish strength with a reasonably crappy hand, which is fine. He was on the button. So, I mean, in the tournament, that's a good play, I think. Cash game, I'm still not entirely sure. But, you know, he's trying to own that button. So, nothing wrong with that. It's how he played afterwards, I think. Yeah. Sure enough, you see bet pretty big, hoping to take it down. But on the flop, I jumped to a 76% lead in the hand. He calls 155 more, and he's only getting 2.9 to 1 odds as a 4 to 1 dog. Not necessarily the worst call, but still not correct either. If the cards are faced up, I would never complain about the call. Absolutely. On the turn, he's totally correct to call, and he proved only a 32% dog from a 25% dog. He got his card in the river, and I lost. He's like, my only option is going in all in on the check race, and I did think about it. I also figured I'm committing myself, and he's committing himself anyway, and he's willing to call 155 more, no one's going in. I don't think it would change much. Was this where I went wrong? Yes, it is. Where am I being results-oriented since he got the money in bed? I'm happy to get there. I mean, I guess I get where his thinking is, but you're also assuming that player is thinking it that way as well, too. I think most players, even in 2 or 3, they're looking at the bet in front of them. They're not thinking about that next bet. That bet in front of him was going to be 400 versus 300 or whatever it was. That makes a bigger difference than, I mean, obviously that he made that call not realizing that he was going to have to put that money in, which I guess is our hero's point, right? But you can't assume players are going to make the same smart decisions you are. So
yeah, the flop is the most offensive thing. He bet 75, which is fine because he had taken the lead in the hand pre-flop, and he just said, hey, I hit middle pair. I'll see bet here and see if I can take it down. And when we raise him 3x to 230, that's the big faux pas there. That guy needs to get out of that hand. He needs to get lucky now to win. Sure, he picked up the flush draw on a turn, but no one thinks runner-runner is a reason to call a 3x raise of my bet with middle pair. you know. Yep. So that's the biggest offense right there. After that, then it's like, it's pretty standard that he picked up a flush draw and has a pair and an overpair, an overcard. You know, I might as well call this 120 to win 1,000 or whatever. So, but just shocking. This guy needs to be in our home game.
Right.
Right. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.